Fourth and final hour, Robbie and Rex Road on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Joe Rex Road, Adam Vingan in this week for Robbie Stanley. We're talking NFL. First, I'd like to let you know, the final countdown to the fall sports season is approaching. And before everyone hunkers down their man cave, we're providing the ultimate date night opportunity. A pair of tickets to see Michael Bublé at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, August 16th, week from tomorrow. Plus, qualify to win a Davidoff cigar, blend bar cocktail, and gift card. Tune in to Chase, Willie, and D-Mace today during the noon hour for your chance to win, brought to you by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. And welcome back in and around the NFL. Well, let's just go right to your squad, Vingan. I mean, I know the team that you are paying the closest attention to is your beloved New Orleans Saints.
Yes.
I will say, I'm pretty excited this year to see the top two picks from 2015 with their opportunities for redemption. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm like confident that Mariota is going to be great in Atlanta. They're not very good.
No.
They have Desmond Ridder, who, by the way, has not been performing well per reports in camp. Desmond Ridder looks like a rookie, and he's going to get the benefit at least of – not the same benefit Malik Willis is getting. I mean, we know Malik Willis is getting this season, but he's going to get the benefit of starting the season on the bench. The people are going to be calling for him, of course. The first, you know, first time Mariota really falters. But Jameis Winston, how are you feeling? You feeling okay about him as your quarterback?
Well, he had a strong start to last season.
He did.
Before he was injured. And then they basically rotated between, you know, Trevor Siemian and Taysom Hill. I think Ian Book. Did Ian Book get a start? No, he dressed, I think, in one game. I can't remember.
I thought Ian Book did get a start. Did he have to get a start?
Yeah, that's bad. It was a rough season for the Saints last year. From the standpoint of injuries. You know, they didn't have Michael Thomas for the entire season.
Yeah, what's going on with him? How's he looking right now?
From what I have read, not bad. You know, looks like a receiver who didn't play at all last year, but he participated in 11 on 11s over the weekend for the first time in a couple years. And, you know, I'm interested to see what this offense looks like, with Michael Thomas back in the fold, with Chris Olave, the rookie out of Ohio State.
Love Olave's game.
They've got Jarvis Landry now as well, which I thought was a good pickup. And of course, Alvin Kamara, though, we are still awaiting results of his hearing. He did get he was arrested, I believe, right? Arrested in February on a battery charge in Las Vegas, and the hearing keeps getting pushed back. So there's an expectation that he could be suspended to start the season. The Saints offense has not hummed in the same way as it used to when Drew Brees was under center. But the defense remains strong, led by Cameron Jordan and Marcus Lattimore. I think it should be an interesting season in New Orleans. With Mariota, it's going to be interesting because, as you said, the Falcons are not a good team. They will not have Calvin Ridley suspended, of course, for betting on a game, which the whole thing is stupid. He's out. Russell Gage defected from Atlanta to Tampa Bay. So it's basically Kyle Pitts and company. And look, Kyle Pitts is a unicorn, as we like to say in sports writing and in sports radio. He is a unicorn. But there's not a lot going on there in Atlanta offensively. So I think Mariota is behind the proverbial eight ball already.
Yeah,
and it's not going to get much prettier, I don't think.
Well, it's not great, but you know what? If you're him, any kind of opportunity to start again was far from assured. I think he should have gone to the Bears when he went to the Raiders, and who knows what might have happened there. But I also think that if Mariota can use all of his athleticism and Arthur Smith is willing to unleash that, that's his best bet of having a renaissance here. On the text line, driven by WilsonConahan.com, got a question from Logan. Is Robbie going to try some of that Aaron Rodgers therapy on his vacation? You got the reference there, Vingan?
Yes.
You familiar with the with the Aaron Rodgers
yes.
really interesting story on his psychedelics.
Yes, he admitted on a podcast. It wasn't, you know, I'm used to hearing him on the Pat McAfee show. I don't believe this was on the Pat McAfee show.
This was not.
But he talked about his usage of ayahuasca and how it helped him have the best season of his life. And it is.
Well, his relationships, I mean, there's a lot to this.
So ayahuasca is a psychedelic drug.
And you were familiar with ayahuasca before this?
Yes, because ayahuasca has therapeutic properties.
Right.
You know, a lot of athletes who have, suffered particularly from head injuries, whether it's multiple concussions or, CTE, there have been studies that show that ayahuasca and similar psychedelic drugs actually do help, repair the brain, but it, I remember watching a segment on Real Sports on HBO within the past year about, psychedelic drugs, and it was really interesting, just because of, how it can help. Now oftentimes you have to go to the jungles of South America to take them, and it's like a controlled environment. Like you take it, you take it with multiple people, and there's someone there who's sort of a shaman of sorts that's leading the situation, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yep.
It's really interesting. I wish I could talk about it, a little bit a little bit more, was a little bit more informed about it. But
you wish that you personally knew what it was like?
I can't imagine taking it now. But I have talked to people who have taken it, and they say that it is helpful to them.
Yeah.
It is helpful to them to take it.
Yeah, no, it is fascinating. There's a lot to it. And I guess when I look at things like this, just like with anything, involving the brain, it seems like there's no way this is could be a one size fits all thing, right? It's like anything. I mean, it's like some people like CTE, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's pretty clear at this point when you look at the research, some people are just more susceptible than others, I think. And there's some similar conditions and very different outcomes for people. And just knowing how different brains are, you would think that I could see this being very helpful for some people and maybe not so much for others, but it is fascinating. It also won't stop the Spicoli jokes all season long, when Robbie's back in here as we talk about Packers games. But I give Aaron Rodgers, in all seriousness, a ton of credit for opening up this discussion and for being willing to do this and talk about it, because I think a lot of people who did this, and probably a lot of people have, who would not talk about it, right?
There was a great story recently in Rolling Stone about Riley Cote, who is a former NHL player, was a enforcer, mostly for the Philadelphia Flyers. And this is from this story, just to give you a sense of what we're talking about. Quote, Cote has emerged as one of the sports world's most vocal advocates for what he calls plant medicines, from cannabis itself, a light psychedelic, to weightier hallucinogens, including DMT and magic mushrooms, to treat post-concussion symptoms, think headaches, insomnia, depression, and possibly the degenerative brain condition known as CTE. Psychedelics. Who I actually talked to about this? Colin Wilson, former Predators player.
Okay,
I talked to him about it because he is a proponent of the usage of psychedelics, because he himself suffered from anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder, and he said that those experiences actually helped him after post career get to a place where he's not as anxious and not as consumed by anxiety. So. I guess that's what Aaron Rodgers was dealing with, maybe. Or maybe Aaron Rodgers just looks like a guy who's, he gives off the vibe that he is a worldly person. I saw that he has a new tattoo, and he was trying to explain it, and it was one of those philosophical things I don't quite understand,
Well, right, yeah. Well, but the thing is with Aaron Rodgers, and it's the thing, people have different, I think we're a lot more open to talking about different things in terms of mental health, anxiety, depression, things like that. Way more openly discussed, which is great in sports, especially. I think there's a big change, but it's also like people have different things, right? So does this thing, is this a catch-all for whatever may ail you? I mean, if there's actually a benefit in fighting CTE or something, that's something that needs to be explored, right?
No, absolutely.
But like Aaron Rodgers, I mean, the only thing I really know on that front is obviously relationships with family is a big thing that's been very reported on. And I guess I have not listened to this podcast yet, but he addressed that as well about the idea of trying to repair those bridges. But it's hard for me to believe that there's just a cure-all.
No.
You know what I mean?
I don't think. You know, there has been a lot of research done on the subject by reputable sources. I believe that John Hopkins, which is one of the top medical facilities in the country, has done a lot of research on this subject. And there are, as I said, therapeutic properties to this. Now, you know, is it something that can become commonplace? We'll see. I doubt it because there's a stigma around those drugs, even if they are, you know,
that has changed a lot, right?
I know, but there are still people who think of psychedelic drugs and think of Woodstock 69, right?
Yes.
Like that will always be there. But I think the stigma around those types of drugs has definitely lessened. It's more widely accepted today than it was however many years ago.
No doubt about it. I think we can get into this more this week. But right now, coming up next, we're going to switch gears to the Vols, talk Mike Wilson, Knoxville News Sentinel, Robbie and Rexford, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Joe Rex Road, Adam Vingan. And we're going to head to our guest line now. Talk a little Vols football, or Vols anything, actually, with Mike Wilson, Knoxville News Sentinel. Michael, how are you today?
Oh, we're doing great. And yeah, Vols anything. I like that as my beat title, Vols anything beat writer.
Yes. What? You know what? Let's actually quickly go off topic, off football. Some movement on the baseball front, some good movement for Tony Vitale's team. Also, I noticed, I think Baseball America had them number 2, really early rankings. But I think they had the Vols number 2 and Vanderbilt number 8 going to next year. But give us the latest on Vitale's ridiculously good roster.
Yeah, they made a big pull when they landed Griffin Merritt, Cincinnati transfer outfielder, hit 315 with 19 homers last year. He has a big right-handed bat, which was key. They got a lot of lefties in the lineup right now, and you look at guys like Blake Burke, so that balances it out a little bit. And they obviously turned over their whole outfield as well, so bringing a good outfielder with a lot of experience. Something like 150-ish starts in his career in that range, so that's a big pull. Pulled a former weekend starter from Charlotte, Andrew Lindsay, who didn't play last year, but is transferring in here, and obviously he'll have a role there, not as a weekend starter, given what Tennessee has, but I think you could argue the biggest pull of all is getting Camden Sewell back for another year. Just as such a versatile pitcher out of the bullpen who's started in some SEC tournament games, throws twice in a weekend sometimes, closes games, multiple innings. I mean, that's just such a big pull with a ton of experience.
Yeah, it's already, you know, I think arguably the best rotation in college baseball next year, but then you fill in some of those gaps. Looks awfully good. One more baseball question, just because it came to mind as I think about this remade outfield. Do you think that this team next year is going to have a very different personality with Beck and Gilbert gone? I mean, Vitello's still Vitello.
Yeah, there's still going to be a fiery competitive nature to it all. But certainly I think we saw a couple points last season where maybe it went beyond fiery and competitive and into just yikes.
Yikesville.
So I think that'll be a little bit different, and
early. So it's been a week now, right? I mean, I was there with you. Well, I guess it was a week ago today when, I don't know about you, but I was very pleasantly surprised to see some team stuff. It looks like it's you guys have been mostly getting period 0 through 2 since then, right? So basically some individual stuff. But anything that day, you know, the Squirrel White jumps out at you, of course. I mean, I think he's as advertised. I like Dylan Sampson, too. I like Turrentine at corner. But those are some early impressions for me. And Brew McCoy, I mean, the physicality of that guy is clear. Anyone right now jumping off the page to you that maybe you weren't anticipating being intrigued by?
You know, you mentioned Brew McCoy. I walked past him on Sunday morning, yesterday, and I hadn't been up close with him, obviously, and I was like, who's this tight end? I mean, it's just a big-bodied wide receiver that I love the idea of seeing play across from Cedric Tillman. That pairing would be so interesting with whomever you throw in the slot, with Hyatt, Squirrel White, Merrill, kind of whoever's in that mix, but just physically impressive. I've also been impressed. Jabari Small just looks more built out and ready to play a consistent role, and he was so nice last year in the role he played. I think he looks more built up and equipped and ready to have a bigger presence there. And I'm going to give a generic one here. The whole secondary just looks better. I think there's just more players there. You talk about Turrentine, Wesley Walker. I mean, you see more guys. And there's a lot of choices there with Christian Charles, Warren Burrell, a lot of guys in that mix. Jalen McCullough's back, Trayvon Flowers is back. So you probably expect them to be the starting safeties, but there's so many guys for those other three spots, whereas last year it was pretty clear who it was going to be. So I'm very interested to see all of those guys compete through this preseason.
Yeah, and you want competition, you want depth, you want people to have to fight for their spot. I guess my question would still be, well, that's good that you have more people. Do you have legit starting SEC cornerbacks who, you know, are going to lock down those spots and you know, give you a chance for some consistency? I still wonder about that.
I do, too. I think you're going to start seeing that stuff. I believe the first preseason scrimmage is tomorrow, so that'll be a window where some of that takes place for this team. Christian Charles, to me, is the intriguing guy. Just as someone who can probably play anywhere in the secondary, but he's taller and fast, so him at cornerback is an intriguing possibility to me.
You mentioned Small, and I'm with you. I think that people forget. First of all, obviously, Tyon Evans was terrific last year. He's a special player. And it would, you know, he's going to be playing for the Louisville Cardinals this year. That's a big loss for the Vols. And L's down for Michelle in the booth. Big loss. I mean, that's a loss for the Vols. It's too bad, you know, whatever exactly happened there went down. It didn't work out. But when Jabari Small was healthy last year, I didn't think there was like a huge drop off. I'm with you. I think he could have a really big year. I wonder behind him, I mentioned Sampson. We know they just got Dixon the transfer. You've got another freshman, and of course you have Jalen Wright. How do you see that? Is there any clarity at all for you after Jabari Small?
I mean, I'd look at Jalen Wright right now as the number two back, given the experience and given him returning. I think he had about 85-ish carries last year, so he got in the mix. And he was really nice in the spring when he enrolled early 2 seasons ago. But I think he was a little bit dinged up early last year, if memory serves. So that might have had a bigger role at that point. After him, yeah, Justin, I think it's Williams-Thompson, I believe, or Thompson-Williams, but I think it's Williams-Thompson. Very talented back, 4-star kid that picked Tennessee over Auburn and the likes of that. He's going to be in that mix, too. Dixon, when he arrives, gets in that mix, get it going. So they've got options back there, but last year they talked about it. They want to play, you know, three backs, you know, SEC play, the physicality of it all. They want to get guys in there. The one thing they do need to establish is kind of, do they have a bigger option as a back? Is that one of the freshmen, Williams-Thompson being the bigger one of the two? Because they don't have, I mean, Tyon Evans was just a big dude. They don't have that guy necessarily right now. So that might be that piece they look for as well.
Yeah. Williams Thomas for the record, but you know, it's camp. It's camp for all of us. That's all right. You were in the neighborhood. But yeah, 6'2", 210, and he looks like a guy who could give you a little bit of that physical presence. But it comes down to, you know, it comes down to how much you can trust a freshman and things like that. I mean, obviously he could be in situations and give them a little bit, because they got to get better in short yardage. They got to get better in the red zone. I guess I could look at that offense and say, you know, short yardage, red zone, I could see that being issues kind of consistently. You know, you get a little bit of give and take with a scheme like that, but you should still be able to pick more of those up, I would think. And, of course, a huge part of that is the offensive line. Do you have any a weekend feel for how that's going to shake out? I mean, really, it's four spots that are pretty much clear, and then left tackle, but I feel like Mincy is going to end up being the guy.
Yeah, left tackle is definitely the one, and it's also the one on the offensive line that you need to know. With Gerald Mincy, Dane Davis, and Jeremiah Crawford are kind of the three there. We've seen Dane Davis and Jeremiah Crawford, more Dane Davis than Crawford last season, and both were pretty inconsistent. Mincy coming in from Florida is the interesting one, without a doubt. You know, we got Glenn Ellerbe last week, and he didn't really have a clear pecking order yet. Said he hopes, by the end of the first scrimmage, that you kind of know what that order is, and then by the second one, you have it kind of solidified, and you then throw as many reps as you can with the five starters, but the rest of the offensive line is pretty darn settled. I mean, you know who Cooper Mays is and what he does. You know who Jerome Carvin is and what he does, and Darnell Wright's played a ton of football, so that's your center all the way across to the right. So you've got a good idea right there.
So the season ticket sales, I'm not going to say I'm surprised, but it's pretty well above, you know, goals and expectations, I would say. You're talking, what, is it 59,000 season tickets sold?
Right around there, yeah.
That speaks to me of a fan base. Look, of course it speaks of a starved fan base, right? But also of a fan base that has a lot of excitement for this particular team. Do you think that that's a comment on just this team, you know, Hendon Hooker, what he did, the excitement, the entertainment level, or where do you think Vols fans are on hypo? Because it is early. Some caution is advised at this point, but I feel like there's quite a bit of excitement.
There is, and I think it goes into a couple of things you said for sure. It's a fan base that's desperate to see football win again. And they feel like they got a little taste of that last season just with what Heupel did in his first year, especially in context of what Tennessee fans had just experienced with Jeremy Pruitt and such a horrible final season and just underachieving. So it was just a complete burst of life, I think, into this fan base. I think also it goes into the brand. It very much is what fans are paying to see, and it's entertainment now. It's not 22 points a game for basically three seasons. It's a team that's going out there and scoring points, doing a ton of things offensively, playing fast, playing exciting, and I think that's really what the fan base is latching onto is, I mean, you're paying to go and see something exciting, and they're enjoying that.
Mike Wilson, Knoxville News Sentinel. Thank you, Michael, as always, and we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Glad to do it. See y'all.
That was Mike Wilson, Knoxville News Sentinel, on the Vols. Ball here on Robbie Rex Show. 102.5, 106.3 the game.
Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. I'm not Robbie or Rex Road. Chase McCabe now out here at Titans training camp alongside Adam Vingan. Joe is en route to Titans training camp, so I'm stepping in to help out for a few minutes. Adam, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yes, thank you.
I know you're hyped for training camp and that football is underway. And I heard you and Joe kind of talking about some things earlier. So I'll just start with this. What are kind of some of your early observations from things that, you know, you've read, you've heard about what's going on here at training camp?
You know, one thing we actually haven't talked about today, Joe and I, we didn't touch on. We spent a lot of time talking about the Titans' offensive line. But, you know, I've heard nothing but praise for Robert Woods.
Yeah.
Whether it's on our airwaves or, you know, or in the written word, you know, around town, you know, I've heard a lot about how great Robert Woods looks coming off of an ACL injury, but just his presence on the field and how he seems to be already developing a leadership role. And last year, when the Titans had training camp, you know, we barely saw Julio Jones. We didn't see a lot of A.J. Brown on the field. And I think it did ultimately hurt the team in the long run, you know, to see Robert Woods out there, to see him, you know, turning a lot of heads, especially coming off of a knee injury, you know, I think bodes well. You know, I'm really intrigued to see how he plays in this offense because, you know, he was a top target in Los Angeles, and I know that he was injured and didn't play in the Super Bowl, and Cooper Kupp, of course, won the Triple Crown, you know, for having the most, that, if I recall correctly, catches, yards, and touchdowns. I think that's the Triple Crown right for a wide receiver. You know, he gets a lot of headlines, obviously, but Robert Woods was a steady hand for the Rams for a few years. So I'm really interested to see, you know, how he changes things on the Titans offense.
Yeah, I am too. And I've Derek and I have talked a lot, and Willie, we've talked a lot about Robert Woods and what he's going to bring to this room, and especially, you know, watching him, just how he's conducted himself at practice. You know that has to be a good look for some of these younger receivers. Treylon Burks especially can lean on him and learn from him, and I feel like that certainly has been the case. But, you know, the other part is him being an effective wide receiver early on, which – I know it's just camp and they're not really hitting each other and they've just put the pads on for the last week. But, you know, if that's any indication, I look forward to seeing what he can do with games. But as Derek has pointed out, you know, coming off a torn ACL, you know, how is he going to be able to get in and out of his breaks and how is he going to be able to cut? You know, how will that affect him as things go on? That is just kind of a wait and see. The Titans did come out with their first unofficial depth chart of the season, something that Mike Vrabel only does because he has to. Nothing really surprising except for they do have Dylan Raidens listed at right tackle, so that continues to be kind of a something to watch with the Titans and who's going to be that right tackle. Aaron Brewer is listed as the left guard, which doesn't really surprise me. I think he's going to win that job.
Yeah, Joe and I talked a lot about Dylan Raidens and Nicholas Petit-Frere today, and Joe thinking that's really the only real competition left in training camp. And it sounds like Petit-Frere has really stood out and might have the inside track on that job. But as you said, on the unofficial depth chart, Dylan Raidens listed ahead of Petit-Frere at right tackle, and those preseason games are really going to be meaningful for those two young players in particular to see who ultimately wins that job. But, you know, I was mentioning a couple times on the air today, you know, a story at ESPN last week about ranking the top, you know, ranking the offensive lines in the NFL based on projected efficiency in terms of run block win rate and pass block win rate, and the Titans were 27th out of 32, which I think those of us who have talked about that today, including Corey Curtis, believe that seems to be about right. And, you know, I think that offensive line, more than any other position group, is the biggest question mark for me as this season approaches, just because of, you know, are not just Raidens and Petit-Frere, but, you know, what can we expect from Taylor Lewan? What can we expect from Ben Jones? You know, there's a lot of questions on that offensive line. And, of course, as we know, that also leads to questions about Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry because that offensive line, you know, is responsible for those guys as well.
Yeah, I mean, run blocking is going to be huge. Not that, you know, Derrick Henry needs to have the best offensive line in the league to do what he does, but still, I mean, that has certainly been something to watch for. Nick Westbrook-Akina also listed as a starter at wide receiver, which, you know, doesn't surprise me right now at all. And, you know, quite frankly, I think he's kind of earned that right. Watching what he's done in training camp, I think, has been very impressive. I know Derek feels that he's going to have a breakout season with the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, who knows? Maybe he can kind of change everybody's way of thinking in that he's not just a number three or a good fill-in, that he could be a legitimate threat with this team moving forward. So, now, Treylon Burks has also been impressive. So I think the hope there is that Treylon Burks is, you know, obviously going to get his as well. I think that certainly is going to be the case. Chig Okonkwo listed as the second tight end on the unofficial depth chart. Talked to him the other day. I've been very impressed with Okonkwo as well. I think he's certainly going to be a factor when it comes to this offense this year, along with the newly signed Austin Hooper at tight end.
Yeah, with all due respect to Anthony Firkser, you know, the Titans did not really have much to work with at tight end last year in terms of, you know, creating offense. And, you know, Austin Hooper is not, you know, not the player he was early in his career, I believe, with the Falcons. He started with the Falcons before moving to the Browns. You know, early, you know, I remember having Austin Hooper on my fantasy team a few years ago and actually, you know, being impressed with the points he was giving me every week. But, you know, Cleveland was kind of a mess last year anyway, and still is a mess. But he wasn't the producer that he was at the start of his career. And I think if he can get back to, you know, some of his Falcon era, you know, production, I think that would be a boon for Ryan Tannehill, because we saw, you know, how effective Tannehill was when he had Jonnu Smith to work with. And, you know, I think that Hooper and Okonkwo, who has, you know, is another player I've heard a lot about early in training camp, as someone who has stood out. You know, I think having an effective tight end who can pose a threat in the receiving game is something that this team hasn't had in a couple of years. And if Hooper can be that guy, that I think that'll help Ryan Tannehill tremendously.
Speaking of Austin Hooper, just found out literally as we were talking, he will join us today on Chase Willie and D-Mace around 11:15 when practice concludes. So he will walk over to our table, and it'll be our first chance to talk to Titans tight end Austin Hooper. So looking forward to that, because like you said, I think he's going to be obviously very, very important to the Tennessee Titans this year. On defense, you know, I immediately looked at the corners, Caleb Farley, Christian Fulton, the two starting corners for this team right now. And you know what? I think that's going to be the two starting corners for this team when they line up against the Giants on September 11th.
I'm really interested to see. We talked about this at the beginning of the show. We talked about Caleb Farley and Christian Fulton, and the Titans have two joint practices coming up against Arizona and Tampa Bay. And you learn a lot in those practices, especially when the teams actually go head-to-head. And I'll be curious to see which receivers on the other teams match up with Farley and Fulton. We were talking about how perhaps with Arizona, you know, DeAndre Hopkins might, you know, Farley might draw DeAndre Hopkins, and Mike Evans against Tampa. You know, I will be interested to see, you know, how Mike Vrabel, like, or more specifically, Mike Vrabel. I'll be interested to see how Mike Vrabel, you know, divvies up the assignments when these two young corners practice with other teams.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be certainly something that I'll be watching as well to see how they match up. No other big surprises on defense other than, you know, the corners and looking at that. Brett Kern listed as the starting punter, which, again, right now is no surprise. Even though Ryan Stonehouse has been impressive as the second punter in camp, I still think Brett Kern will be the punter for this team moving forward. Adam, good to talk to you. I believe Joe is about here, so I'll turn things back over to him. And then we'll take things over at 10 o'clock here at Titans training camp.
Yeah, well, thanks for stepping in. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. He is Adam Vingan. I'm Chase McCabe. Coming up next, Joe Rexroad rejoins from Titans training camp. And again, Austin Hooper going to join us on Chase, Willie, and D-Mace coming up at around 11:15. It's Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
And welcome back in, everybody. Final segment. Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road. Adam Vingan in for Robbie. I am coming from St. Thomas Sports Park. Titans warming up here, getting some individual stuff in before what is actually, Adam, the last day of practice on this field this week for the Titans. So this is definitely a day I would think would be a telling day. They are in shorts, I will say. I wondered about after the full pads and the physical practice yesterday if they'd be in shorts. They are, shorts and helmets. But today's it, and then they're off tomorrow. They travel to Baltimore Wednesday. They play Thursday, and then, you know, actually, they don't have a practice schedule Friday. Vrabel has a presser. So this is it for this week with the Titans out here on the practice field.
While we were talking to Chase, or I was talking to Chase, we talked a little bit about the unofficial depth chart, which I don't think you and I got to before before you left. And Chase and I, you know, didn't see anything on there that really surprised us. He did mention, based on our conversations throughout the show, you know, that Dylan Radin's ahead of Nicholas Petit-Frere on the depth chart. Of course, an unofficial depth chart. But I'd be curious if there is anything on that depth chart you saw that caught your eye.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up. So I'm looking at it now. Again, there are three slashes. I'm not surprised at all the way it's listed. It's Aaron Brewer listed. It's Dylan Radin's listed. And Caleb Farley. But then there's a slash after their name. So you got Jamarco Jones after Brewer, Petit-Frere after Radin's, and Roger McCreary. That catches my eye a bit. You know, it's just interesting with McCreary because he's been working the slot almost exclusively so far because Elijah Molden has been out. So McCreary has had terrific reps, like starter reps in the slot. But they list him as a potential co-starter at outside corner with Caleb Farley. I will say that McCreary has just, in general, just played well enough that you've got to consider him a possibility. I will be surprised if he's able to take a starting spot away from Caleb Farley, but at the least, he's our fourth corner. I'm not surprised Radin's, you know, would be listed before Petit-Frere at this point. I think that's, like I said, that's the hottest competition for a spot. I really don't look at Jamarco Jones right now as competing with Aaron Brewer at left guard, but, you know, we'll see. It is still early. That's something to keep in mind. One other thing from this depth chart that definitely catches my eye is that they list Kyle Phillips as the starter at punt returner. You know, they've had a few different guys back there, including Traylon Burks, catching some punts, but this lays out kind of what I expected, but it's just interesting that it's on the depth chart that way. You know, they've got it, Kyle Phillips, they got Mason Kinsey second, Reggie Robertson third at the punt returner depth chart, and, you know, Phillips, to me, that's one of the reasons I've kind of considered him a lock to make the team because I think that's what they want. They want him in that role. They think he can be effective. More and more, he's also doing things on the field as a receiver that make me feel like he's awfully close to a lock. Kickoff returner, interesting. Dontrell Hilliard listed as the starter. Trenton Cannon, number two. Mason Kinsey, three. Trenton Cannon is a guy I picked to make the team going into camp because of kickoff return. If that's truly going to be Dontrell Hilliard returning kicks, then that makes it a lot less likely Trenton Cannon makes the team.
So, as you said, this is the only practice of the week. The Titans start their preseason later this week against the Baltimore Ravens. You know, you said that it's not a padded practice, but what are you going to be looking for today? What are you going to be keeping your eye on?
Yeah, well, it's still, even though it's not padded, you know, you can still have you can have good pass pro and pass rush reps. So I'm still looking at that, looking at when they go team, who's with the ones at right tackle, who's with the, because, you know, again, I haven't seen like variation at left guard. I think right now Aaron Brewer is, it in terms of how the coaches are deploying things, he's the starter. That's definitely different than right tackle. So just looking at that, who's getting some of these reps. But obviously days like this, there's more to be gleaned from the skill guys. So anytime, again, you get to see 16 against 3, 16 in white, 3 in blue, Traylon Burks, Caleb Farley, it's a fantastic matchup of big, physical, fast guys. And, you know, two guys who
the Titans hope to be a big part of their future in the next few years. That's sort of, and it seems like a lot of these drills, they've sort of gotten it lined up so those two can go at each other. Seeing, you know, Racy McMath, can he keep stacking days? You know, he's been a guy who's played extremely well. Chigakonkwo, a guy who's, you know, had some louder days and some quiet days, but a guy who I just think is destined to have some kind of role for this offense. And then, you know, you're always watching Malik Willis, of course, in the quarterbacks. I mean, Malik Willis, big day. Big week for him. Big day for him coming up Thursday. Can he come out and, and take a step forward in his development, this long development process?
So I just want to note from our friend Teron Davenport, who is out there with you, he says, no sign of Elijah Molden, Roger McCreary, Cody Hollister, Josh Kalu, Dylan Cole at the start of Titans practice today, as well as Danico Autry. Is there anybody on that list that is a surprise to you, not practicing, at least?
Well, McCreary for sure. I'm not very close to the bikes right now. There's quite a few guys on the bike, so it looks like he might be out on the bike. Now, you know, again, sometimes a guy on a bike is just keeping his conditioning up while having a day off. Sometimes a guy on a bike has got an injury that he's working out. So I'm surprised here, McCreary. That would be awfully impressive if the rookie earned himself this day off. I will say that. More likely, it's probably a little minor injury. I didn't see anything yesterday, but that'd be my guess. Autry, yeah, that seems like especially on a day like this, not padded, that he would get a day off. So nothing too, really, it's been pretty good for them in camp so far. They've had pretty good luck. Things have gone pretty well in that regard. It is an opportunity with McCreary out. Keep watching Shakur Brown, the signee in camp out of Michigan State, who has definitely opened some eyes here the last few days.
I know it's early in the week, but has Mike Vrabel said how he intends to handle the quarterback split in against Baltimore? Imagine that Malik Willis and Logan Woodside, of course. So we don't expect Ryan Tannehill, but do we know what the split's going to be in terms of playing time?
No, and I doubt he'll tell us.
What would you expect?
I expect it's a half. I expect Woodside to go the first half and Willis second half. That's be my guess. At some point you may get to the third preseason game. You may see, what, Willis get a whole game, or like three quarters of a game. I mean, at some point, I wouldn't be surprised if he played more of a preseason game than Woodside. But, yeah, right now that's what I would expect. I'd expect a split, Woodside to get the first part of it and get to play with, some ones, but, a lot of twos. That's what's going to be really interesting is, how much is a, like, Raidens and Petit Frere, how much do they play? How much does a Treylon Burks play? Does he play in this game? Is Kyle Phillips playing this game? Those guys are going to be on the team, but they could use work, in a game. You also don't want to get anybody hurt at that spot. So that's what's going to be really interesting to me is just how many of these guys who Vrabel knows he's going to lean on this year, is he still willing to deploy in those preseason games? I tend to believe as each year passes it's less and less, and more that he's like, let's evaluate the young guys and they've got the practices against the Bucks, they got the practices against the against the Cardinals, and those are really good reps that, of course you get hurt in those too. You get hurt doing anything out here, but I just feel like he just thinks less and less that it's worth getting guys in harm's way during the preseason games. So I think that's about it, Mr. Vingan. So thank you today, and we will see you again tomorrow. We got a lot going on tomorrow's show. I will have a full report from here. So
use the notes app so you can actually read your takeaways from practice, please.
Yes, and by the way, it was Chance Campbell who had the PBU TD texting me, and I didn't see it until later. It was Chance Campbell with the great breakup on the pass to Chigakonkwo. So there you go. And now, coming up next, Chase, Willie, and D-Mace. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.